The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 30th of May, 2025. I hope you're very well indeed, and you welcome along to the last 9 till noon show of this week. And it's the usual busy one, the usual mix. We have our last entertainment slot in its current format for the summer. That's coming up with Michael and Fionnuala at 11, and lots on between 10 and 11. And for the next hour, we are in the company of our Friday panel. Let's introduce them to you. Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear, Letterkenny. Good morning to you, Leonard. How are you keeping?
Not too bad. Thanks very much, Greg.
We also have Cathy Donaghy, journalist and author. Hi, Cathy. Great to have you on the programme as always.
Good morning, Greg. Hi, guys.
And I'm doing great. I hope you're well too. And Hugh Friel, who's Aroma Health Coordinator at Northwest Region with the Donegal Travellers Project. Good morning, Hugh. All right, okay. Hopefully your sound improves. I'll come back to you in a sec. Leonard, lost it to get through at the moment. Just your views as a business person on the debate that's been raging all week about traffic. It's a tough one, isn't it, for those in the community, in the business community, because, you know, once you get into Letterkenny, there's plenty of parking. You can move around quite freely. You don't want to discourage anybody else from coming into Letterkenny, but also, too, it must be hard to ignore that it's clearly more difficult to get around now. And there are concerns that the new active travel plans might actually worsen the situation. As a Main Street business person, do you have a view?
Well, Greg, Joe, I would always be of the opinion that the day we have no traffic in Letterkenny is worse than actually having traffic. But, you know, this plan, the active travel, I get where they come from, but we would feel actually there's certain parts should have came first. Like the whole bus network should have came first. You know, at the end of the day, we're trying to get people who are living in the town maybe to use the car less. So the buses would actually help there straight away. So, you know, the active travel plan is as good as it probably will in the future may help. We do think that maybe there's other parts should have came first. Like.
But I suppose it's a wait and see. You know, the money was there. The plans have been approved. We have to sort of see what the implications of it might be.
Yeah, but you know, like, Greg, I still say if there was other parts put in place first, this wouldn't be as big an issue. Like the bus, like, well, we've seen the plans of the bus network, and you'll be able to get on and off a bus every half hour in different spots. And a guy I work with, his son's at Sligo, and that's the way it works at Sligo. It's absolutely brilliant. The student issues it all the time. And that's the kind of things we need to get traffic moving down. We're always going to have pinch points at certain times of the day because, you know, there's 10,000 people coming to Letterkenny every day to work. We have 4,000 or 5,000 students come in at least. You know, we're a hub, and the bridge is an issue. Like, you know, the port bridge, we've got one bridge that kind of services the whole other end of the county. So, but there's still factors they could put in, like, you know, the park and ride thing, all that kind of stuff could be put in place very quick. But, you know, within a short sort of time, that would actually alleviate a lot of bad. We're never going to sort of traffic problems. Even when we get the bridge, it's not sort of traffic problems. But I still say we need traffic in the town too, like.
Yeah, of course, exactly. We never want to discourage it, but when so many people are raising issues, you kind of have to address them. Hugh Friel, I'm not sure how much you travel in and around Letterkenny or what's your view in this regard?
Can you hear me, Greg?
Yeah, come on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, carry on, Hugh.
Yeah, I think that, like, I think we've massive issues in terms of traffic and the gesture of traffic. If you look at the morning time when people are committing to go to work in the morning time, like, you have to leave your house. Maybe I live in Ballyhale, and I know certainly that to get in for 9 o'clock, I need to leave at 8 o'clock, ten past eight. That's 40 minutes. And the evening time, I can sit, do the same journey for ten minutes. So them. I suppose congested traffic issues needs to be addressed in relation to, you know, even the Port Road at the Polestar roundabout. That road, the design of the emergency services coming in there is just unbelievable that millions and millions have been put onto a road and not designed to cater for emergency ambulance or Gardaí or fire brigade. So we need a really congested plan in relation to how we use our services better, how we introduce, you know, park and ride, and maybe look at escalating people on buses from outside Letterkenny a little bit, where there's appropriate car parks where you can leave your car, come into the town. You know, we always want a bit of traffic, but sitting in traffic for an hour and a half is not viable. And then, you know what I mean, in terms of the economy, in terms of, you know, the fumes and the global warming, we have to take all them things into consideration as well.
Cathy, from polling, you know, over the course of the week on this issue, people have no issues with active travel as such. It just seems to be a planning thing that we're sort of starting a jigsaw in the middle, or we're putting the cart before the horse. All of this are fundamentals to a growing modern town. It's just that they seem to be happening at the wrong point in the process.
That seems to be the way. Greg, it's very clear that, I mean, Letterkenny has, you know, grown up probably exponentially, like, you know, in terms of the population. It's a huge town now. It's a huge catchment area. You know, it is definitely a failure of planning when you see that you might want to go, like, from where I live in Inishowen, you might want to go to Kilmacrennan, Dunfanaghy, beyond. Like, if there was a way of bypassing the town, which is really, really needed at this stage. And I know maybe, you know, Leonard wants, you know, you want that footfall. But we've seen in other towns around the country, like, there's a town I'm familiar with, Carrickmacross, was bypassed, Monaghan Town was bypassed. The town centres are thriving in those towns. Do you know what I mean? Especially Monaghan Town, where they've done a lot of work to encourage people in. So I do think that there's going to have to be major infrastructural development, which probably in the short term will cause more upheaval. But you really need people that don't need to necessarily be in Letterkenny. But also Letterkenny, for Donegal, Letterkenny is seeing itself as the hub. As the, you know, you want to attract visitors to Letterkenny, to the town's nightlife and restaurants and everywhere else, you know, so as they can go on and they can go off to Kilcar or use it as their base when they're travelling around Donegal. Right now, it's just bedlam. It's not attractive to sit there in traffic. You want to go to a town where you can get into easily. You can, you know, go up to the Cathedral Quarter. You can go to your nice restaurants. Right now, that's not, that I don't think that's a viable option. And it really is up to everybody to really try and fix this.
Yeah, okay.
The thing I'd say, Greg, like, yes, you're talking, yeah, I know you're talking about traffic, but you're chatting about maybe 2 hours a day. You're chatting from 8 to 9. And, like, and Cathy's chatting with Carrickmacross. No disrespect to Carrickmacross. Carrickmacross is a village compared to Letterkenny.
It's
the biggest town in the country. Like, it's the fastest growing town. Like, you know, I was in Dublin there recently, and it took me an hour and 10 minutes to drive 2.5 miles. Like, you know, so, you know, we're chatting about a thriving town, and we shouldn't be, you know, we shouldn't run down the town. Like, at the end of the day, I'm on about times in the morning, times in the evening. Mm. But every other hour of the day, the traffic moves in the town. Like, yeah. You only see on maybe a certain wet day where the schools are getting out at the one time. But that's just, it's like geography times. So, like, all the factories are getting out at the one time, all the schools
are
getting out.
I think there are those that might be coming in the Remelton Road that might argue it's not just for a couple of hours a day. But the one thing it's important to note, I think, Leonard, whether you live in Letterkenny, whether you do business in Letterkenny, or you are from anywhere in the Northwest, everyone wants the same thing. They want a town that's comfortable to access, but they also want to be able to get other places too if they wish to. So it's, I think everyone's on the same page about wanting Letterkenny to maximise its potential and continue to grow and prosper as it is. But you can't ignore realities of life in terms of moving around, Leonard.
But it is politics too, Greg. Like, we're waiting 30 years for a bridge, you know, and that bridge won't solve everything, mate. But you're on about Carrickmacross being bypassed, Monaghan bypassed. They've all got their bypass. Letterkenny's been waiting 30 years for a bridge, like. Mm. You know, and that's politics. Like, that's nothing to do with the town. The town has still grown, even with all the restraints on it, with the infrastructure, like.
All right, okay. Listen, lots to digest. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number if you wish to get involved in that conversation. We're going to be talking health next. Before moving on, Leonard, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, like, it was great just before that break to hear sort of a pushback from the business community on the narrative, because I think it's kind of been absent in this whole conversation, you know, despite efforts to sort of, you know, get a sense of what the business community feels, you know. And as I say, I think more of that's what is required, you know, to get that story out there as well.
Like, Greg, I keep saying, like, you know, you look at Letterkenny for the shop and the restaurants. We are a massive town, like, and we should be proud of that too. We are, every large town has traffic problems. Well, you know, but that's part of the, you know, what I love, the traffic to flow around the town. Like, you know, I hear people saying, oh, 20 years ago, the traffic flowed around the town. Well, 20 years ago, the town was half the size. And, you know, so, like, and I still say, like, Greg, I run the town a lot. Like, there is pinch points at certain times, and we all know that, and we have to just adapter travel. Say,
it's just good to hear the business voice in this conversation. Right, this week it was confirmed at a regional level, at least, that Letterkenny University Hospital is not being considered for a surgical hub. Just so people are aware, surgical hubs, of which there are six, provide general surgery, dermatology, gynecology, ophthalmology, ENT, orthopedics, pain relief, plastic surgery, urology. The hubs can also be used for non-complex procedures, for example, varicose veins, hernia repair, other keyhole surgery, stuff that some of that stuff not available at the moment. A surgical hub, though, will be established in Sligo. Instead, there are plans, and they are just plans, being floated for an ambulatory centre for Letterkenny, which is claimed, in the most simplest of terms, is bigger and better than a surgical hub. But best estimates that that is years away. There is a window of opportunity here because the business plan for Sligo has not yet been put on the desk of the Health Minister. She has not signed off on whether it's Sligo or Letterkenny, or as many would want, both. I'll stay with you, Leonard, because you're up on my screen. If called on, do you think the public would back those in the medical field who've written extensively about this last year in an effort to reverse the decision, throng the streets of wherever that might be? Or is it are the public not really engaged on this issue?
Well, Joe, Greg, this is back to the same old narrative. Like, you know, Sligo, Galway, like, you know, I look at somebody from Sligo, I was just looking at last night. If somebody from Sligo had to come to Letterkenny, it's an hour and a half. Somebody from Anishowen has to go to Sligo. That's 2.5 hours. But so, you know, you have Sligo to Galway, which is another 2 hours trip. So really, we should have had something like that up here. Like, you know, at the end of the day, we're the poor neighbour all the time. Like, and I always think we are reactive. We're not proactive. We should have been shouting about this a year ago, Greg, like when this has been talked about. Again, I'm only hearing about this now as the decision's nearly going to be made. You know, I've heard you chatting to Minister and she's a decision that hasn't been made yet. Them decisions are made, Greg. I don't care. I just don't believe it's not made. But we're too reactive up here. You know, that we should be. We should be back in the health system up here and getting out on the streets about it. Like, and but our politicians should be shouting louder too, Greg. You know, they'll tell you they're shouting, but I seen even with the Little Angels thing, perfect example. Me and you knew for 3 or 4 years that school wasn't big enough. But still, until the school was nearly ready to open, then the reaction was, you know, this should have been done 3 or 4 years ago. We shouldn't be having these conversations when the decision is about to be made. Like.
Yeah, I will say, you're not wrong, but in the letters that were published last year, and we covered them extensively from the consultants, they did call for the urgent need for a surgical hub. Like, they have been banging on the drum, but in terms of it being screamed from the rafters in the Dáil, I'm not saying it hasn't been mentioned, but considering health is so important, I'm really surprised it hasn't been getting more traction from RTDs.
But that's what I'm saying, Greg. We're only starting to hear about this recently as Joe Public about the importance of this hub. But again, you said there a year ago, you were seeing documents about it. Like, where has the will to get this in Letterkenny or in Donegal from our TDs and our politicians? I don't know. I just find there's a silence time they'll speak about once in the Dáil, but where's the momentum? Like, where's the momentum to keep this going, to make sure this happens for Donegal? Like?
You know, a TD has potentially have the opportunity, you know, for this to be their legacy, effectively, that all they did for the most part was talk about stuff like this. But we don't seem to do politics like that anymore. Cathy, you know, it is, again, as much as we have such amazing things in this county, it's just a constant struggle, battles on matters such as health. And it seems, if you look at the investment plans for Galway University Hospital, for Sligo University Hospital, and then you look at what's planned for Letterkenny University Hospital, you know, in black and white, it is quite concerning.
It does feel like the poor relation. There's no doubt about that. I think, you know, we touched on this when we talked about traffic, and we talk about infrastructure and the population growing and Letterkenny needing, you know, I mean, so much needs to change. I think, you know, there's something that really bothers me when it comes to stories like this around the health services. It's almost like when people are sick, you know, they don't have the energy to protest, or their families are too immersed in looking after their loved one. They don't have the bandwidth to get out on the street and protest. And I actually think, you know, there's a cynicism at the heart of this. The government knows that. They know that the people who are impacted most by these decisions do not have the bandwidth to get out and protest. And in a way, you know, that's when we're well, we should be shouting the loudest. And when the rest of us are, you know, knowing, having loved ones, you know, in services or needing that care, it's not when we're sick that we should be making the noise about this. It's when we're all well that we should actually say, not good enough. You know, not good enough. I find this really, really cynical that it's the health services, and there are people who really, really need these services and would need that surgical hub and things like, we know that cancer patients, and there are wonderful teams of people in Letterkenny Hospital. Anybody who's been through breast care knows the professionalism of the unit and the oncology team in Letterkenny. But the figures speak for themselves. You know, 31% of cancer patients receive chemotherapy, you know, within the recommended 15 days, compared to 62% at Galway and 73% in Sligo. Like, what's that? Yeah. You know, what is this about? Why are the differentials so great when it comes
to Just in relation to that one statistic, thankfully, because it was covered so widely, I suspect, that 31% has increased to around about the 70 mark. But that's only in the last couple of months, Cathy, and that's only because, I believe, arguably because of campaigning. Exactly, yeah.
Yes, when we were talking about... Yeah. And that's the point, Greg. We've got to be talking about things like these. I mean, this is basic healthcare in this day and age. You know, you know, all of us know someone who's taken that road to Galway or Sligo for healthcare. Okay. And they are so grateful to receive the care. But, you know, we need to be shouting about what's needed on our doorstep so people don't have that journey, so they can have that care right on their doorstep.
Hugh, I don't want to guilt trip anyone because we all have busy lives, but if you have Relay for Life, you know, you've got thousands of people that attend the event itself and many thousands more that will donate. If there's a tragedy in the county, you know, people en masse will donate to it and are clearly very moved from it. Yet here we have a situation at the moment where the future of Letterkenny University Hospital is at a very critical stage here. We heard from the consultants and doctors last year, it's at crisis point. But if you were to organise a protest in relation to it to try and argue for increased resources, a special case to be made of Letterkenny University Hospital, a surgical hub for Letterkenny, would you get 500 or 600 people out to a protest? I think you would potentially struggle. Why is that?
I think, Greg, that it's probably because people have lost heart in the political system and lost kind of the awareness of being part of that democracy in terms of them advocating for the surgical hub in Letterkenny. And, you know, for the geographical county of the size of Donegal, we go back into Glencommelkill, Kilcar, down into Dunloe, Arnmore Island, Torrey Island. You know, I worked with an individual who was expected to come from an island to cancer and services in Galway from Arnmore Island and to get the bus at 9 o'clock in the morning to go up there. So it's really unrealistic when we talk about we're the forgotten county. But I think we need to be accountable as well. I think we need to get out. We need to protest. Our hospital, Letterkenny Hospital, is in crisis. It is in crisis. The waiting time in Letterkenny is not 4 hours. The waiting time is around 8 hours to 10 hours. So we have to be very realistic when it comes to this. I was speaking to a doctor in Letterkenny Hospital one evening, and he told me that he was on shifts for 12 and 13 hours for 5 days in a row, and he was exhausted. He told me that himself. He said, I'm exhausted. He said, I'm ready to fall asleep. He said, I'm just totally out on my feet. And I think when we're coming to our health service and we have our doctors who's looking after our loved ones and ourselves, that and nurses who are exhausted, who are on the brink of, you know, crisis. Like, I think it's unbelievable when it comes to Letterkenny and on what we're not talking about Letterkenny. We're talking about the whole county of Donegal. This is bigger than Letterkenny thing. You know, people talk about our town, Letterkenny, the hospital in Letterkenny. The hospital's in Letterkenny, but it's a county hospital. It's not a Letterkenny hospital, it's a county hospital. So I think that that surgical hub would be essential, Greg, in relation to, you know, alleviating and taking the pressure off A&E. And that's what every GPs at the minute that you ring, you can't get an appointment, right? It's very, very difficult. There's a waiting time of a week. It could be 2 weeks. What does a person do in that sense? They go to A&E. they get worried, they get stressed, they panic, so they go to EDs to see a doctor. It's clogging up the system. And what we need to do is alleviate that. We need to start getting our services and the appropriate services in here, like a surgical hub, who can take away some of the pressure that A&E is facing at the minute.
Yeah.
And I think that's very essential. I think we had, you know, we had TDs shouting about iPad centres and representing, you know, they need to call out the government on this, they need to call out the Minister for Health on this, they need to have an urgent meeting with her in relation to, you know, the geographical spread of this county. They need to, you know, advocate more and lobby more, as Ms. Watson said. It's let them be heard. You know, we elected them to, and the local politicians to represent us. We shouldn't have to go out and protest. There are elected bodies, there are elected TDs in this county that should be bound together in relation to the health crisis what we're facing in this county. And that's the whole county of Donegal. I'm not talking about just Letterkenny. And I think we relate that too much, that we're Letterkenny. This is Glencommonkill, Carrickcarr, Killy Beggs, Dunloe, Iron Island, Tory Island, and a Shone area. So we're talking geographical spread of Donegal back to the far corners of it. You know, what access is that for people? And we talk about, it's handy for us to go to Sligo, and sometimes it's an hour and a half, 2 hours. What about somebody down Dunloe to Ironmore Island, you know, down around the Carindona and the Shone areas, 2.5 hours, 3 hours to go to Galway? So we have to be realistic, Greg, when it comes to this.
Yeah, 2 hours before you get from Mallin to Donegal Town, let alone the journey on. But Cathy, you know, there is a window of opportunity here, and to the point about sort of where the political will is here, because we're heading towards summer recess at the moment. There are question marks over, sorry, the decision certainly could be worthy of scrutiny, because the argument was made that population was considered in the decision to locate this hub in Sligo. And I hate this either or, it could be both. But anyway, but Sligo obviously has much less of a population than Donegal. The health minister, as recently as this morning, says that she hasn't received the business model yet. So there is an opportunity to pressure the health minister, who only has the information that she has, to go back to the HSC and say, right, hold on a second, I've got some very strong representations here from Donegal. Explain to me the logic of your decision and the business case and why you made that decision. You know, that's, she is the head of it. She can push it back. So, as I say, you know, now is the chance, if you have a voice in the Dáil or the Shannon, now is the chance to at least get the health minister to scrutinise this decision before she signs off on it.
I think that's a really good point, Greg. Now, that's something not just for our TDs and elected representatives. That's something for all of us now. You know, anyone listening to this programme this morning can email their TD, can phone them and say, I want you to make representations on our behalf. It's not good enough. This is what we want. I suppose it comes that every one of us has a voice. That's why we voted for people in the first place. One thing I will say, it's slightly an aside, that the last general election, I felt certainly in Donegal that there was a creeping apathy about what change was possible. I really, really felt that people were turning off politics. They were browbeaten by the lack of change, by the fact that things were changing so slowly in Donegal in terms of infrastructure. But, you know, when it comes to health, this is something I think that is so fundamental, you know, that right now there is, all of us have, you know, a window, as you say. So now's the time, write a letter,
I see people in the Dáil and the veins busting out their necks talking about things on the other side of the world, you know, and I'm not being overly critical, but blooming hell, give us some of that passion here about Donegal, because, you know, people are dying left, right and centre that don't need to die.
Go ahead, Lennon, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, Greg, like, and what you're saying is there, like, and I agree, leaders and legacy, like, you know, I seen a year and a half ago, Greg, with the CDNT, where we were sitting at 40% staff, and we got all the TDs and HSE into a room. And in fairness to the TDs, they all, because we said, put politics out, it's just about children and, you know, special needs out there. And they did, and we all worked together, and we got things to change. So it can happen, but we need them all to be working together. TDs, senators, a whole lot. In a room, as you say, with the minister, knocking that minister door.
They were all in a room recently with the hospital manager, with the head of the HSC, Sialta, sorry. But, I think Padraig McLaughlin may have spoken after that meeting. But my point, Leonard, just you and Cathy, and everyone can come back on this, but just to Cathy's point about apathy, but I want to speak to you, Leonard, about the little angel situation for an example. You know, that was parents of children desperate, and they had to take that issue by the horns and effectively try and sort it out themselves. They did with the CDNT as well. We were up in Carndonagh recently. It was a grassroots campaign that finally got day services for older people delivered there. If you look at who's advocating for the hospital mostly, it's cancer, people who have had multiple experiences with cancer, people who have lost families with cancer, people that others should be advocating on their behalf. They should be recovering or grieving or regrouping. Mm-hmm. Now, you couldn't stop them doing what they want to do, don't get me wrong. But is that why people are apathetic, Cathy? Because really, it seems if anything's going to change, it's those most greatly affected by it that seem to have to drive change and almost embarrass the state into action.
It always kind of amazes me. And I suppose, you know, as a journalist, I'm always, you know, amazed when people share their stories, sometimes in the most difficult of circumstances. But, you know, there is that, we know that stories have the power to change lives. And when people do say, this is my family story, they do get a response from government. It's a shame that that's what it takes, that people have to put their head above the parapet and share really, you know, intimate details sometimes of their family's life, of their situation, of their health situation before they can get that. But I suppose it does come back to as well, we know that when we, that the power of stories to make change, and all of us, you know, telling our stories and actually, you know, putting that pressure on and not being sort of faceless, nameless numbers, but real people. And I think that does impact change. And I will always be heartened by the fact that, you know, when we do come together and we do actually raise our voices, we can have that power. We can make change, like Leonard has said, but we can't just sit back and rest in our hands. It is up to all of us. We have a voice. If we can pick up a phone or write an email today, you know, that might be one small thing, but these ripples, they do have an impact. You know, so we can't just all say it's not up to me, it's them and the doll, you know, whatever. We actually have to take sort of a small individual responsibility as well. And then that's better for the collective and the community. And hopefully we all benefit and there might be some good news at the end of this.
Yeah, but yeah, I get you and you're 100% right. But you would hope that should be in addition.
Yes.
To the dull representation, rather than it almost some might feel filling a vacuum of representation there. Hugh, did you want to come back in there?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Greg, that I think when it comes to our democratic right to assembly, I think Donegal, I don't know what, has people lost the kind of the ability to assemble and to protest? I don't know what has gone wrong.
But it's core, that. But because I do think it's core issues that affect us directly, right? So, and in the here and now. So in terms of water rates, that was very clear. Every household was going to be affected by it. People didn't want it. They went out in the massive numbers. But if you had Rosina Toner down there who did her protests over cancer services, right? You know, not everyone's affected by it. So they're like, well, fair play to Rosina. She's doing great work there. But, you know, I'm going to the car boot sale. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not...
I get you. And I think, Craig, look, there's not a house in this county that hasn't been affected by illnesses of some type or some type of, you know, serious illnesses or light illnesses when you go to A&E. But my point is that I think that we've heads here in Donegal that could assemble massive assemblies like Jim McGuinness, like, head of the GEA in Donegal. We've other figures there that could, you know, certainly lead the way in relation to a massive protest in Donegal. I think people will come out, you know, if they're called upon in relation to the issues that we're facing. And I think a lot of people doesn't really know the severity of it as well. They don't realise how bad or how in crisis we are in Letterkenny General Hospital. People hear about the overcrowding, they hear about the trolleys, they hear about the beds. But if it's not really related to you, and I think it's really disheartening to see, and being in A&E, and you look at the older members of the community, and I really feel for them, sitting in them hard chairs, Greg, for 12 to 16 to 18 hours at 70, 80 years of age, people with complex health issues, You know, certainly they're the people that needs to be looked after, people with cancer, you know. Like, I think they're the real heartbeat of the community that need to be assured and looked after and a bit of comfort when they access them kind of services. And I think that's where we're failing down as well. I think that people are left to limbo in terms of being there for 18 hours. We've been there with our parents and various different people. And I think it's that's really hurting, as I say. That really goes to heart in relation to older people with serious complex issues. And I think we've a great community in Donegal, and I think if we can get to the heart of it and assemble people and do the right advocating, as Thingley says, and to lobby our politicians and let everybody's voice be heard.
Yeah, you see, I think a lot of people's experiences too, a lot of experiences at Letterkenny University Hospital are positive. So say Tuesday afternoon, you're playing football, you do your ankle in, you turn up, you're through A&E in 3 hours, they wrap you up, they say it's not broken, you go, thank God it's not broken, you go home and you go, wow, brilliant, that's fantastic. Conversely though, you might go there with signs of a stroke, or you believe to have a stroke, and you're sat there for ages and ages and ages, and you know then your experience is more negative, or you're in there with your mum and dad, or you're in there with your partner who's just had or is having a suspected miscarriage, and you have to go in through the A&E doors and share the same toilets as other people. People have different experiences, but generally speaking, the staff are doing their absolute utmost there. A caller says, hi Greg, I currently work in Sligo University Hospital after transferring from Letterkenny, and the only way I've described the difference, it's like working at the bottom of the Titanic ship to the luxury at the top. It seems to be like Galway is gold standard, Sligo silver, and Letterkenny is bronze. That's someone's working there. Sligo are getting a new 2 CT scanner. They're getting two new wards, two 21-bed wards. There's a huge programme of investment that's been ongoing or is ongoing. Letterkenny University Hospital, we've got this notion at this point of a ambulatory care centre, and also a bit of work in health and safety through fire and all that kind of stuff. Okay, a caller says, the neglect of Donegal is unfortunate because our TDs, councillors, do not just care enough to shout in the Dáil, to shout on the TV, radio stations, to shout on the streets, but more importantly, the people do not support anyone who does campaign. They do not care until it lands at their door. We have the power, but just do not make ourselves heard. In fairness, I will say the councillors have been and consistently worked very, very hard in this area. That's just my view, but I respect yours if you see otherwise. Leonard is saying, what a load of rubbish Leonard's saying. I was going to try and sugarcoat it, but I can't. I went to town twice just from Remelton Road direction, and the first time I sat at the Tower Court, second time I sat at the A7, Arena 7, and it wasn't morning or evening time. He worries when there's no traffic in town. Ask himself why there's no traffic, because people avoid having to go if possible. He's obviously not sitting in traffic every day. I think there are particular pinch points, and I think the Remelton Road is one of those, Leonard, that you can see, traffic disruptions at different times of the day. But your point still stands. You don't know every road coming into the town. We should also have a cardiac unit in Letterkenny. If it wasn't for Derry, I wouldn't be alive. The traffic in Letterkenny is frightening if you find yourself needing urgent medical help. But we can't have everything, but we could have had a surgical hub. That's the thing, obviously we'd love absolutely everything, but we have to be realistic too. The surgical hubs, they look great. Right, we're in the company of Hugh Friel, Leonard Watson and Cathy Donaghy. New figures, I'll come to that actually because I have a bit more details on this piece of paper here. Disclosures of sexual violence to the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre last year reached the highest rate in the organisation's 46-year history, according to its latest annual report, and generally speaking, it is right across the country. For the first time, they had 20,000 contacts, in excess of 20,000 contacts to the charity's 24-hour helpline. More than half of new therapy clients, or 55%, had suffered other forms of violence in addition to sexual violence, including physical and psychological abuse, coercive control, spiking, trafficking, stalking, threats to kill. Some have attributed the increases to online toxic masculinity. There is certainly, hopefully, We are creating a society where victims feel more empowered to come forward. That definitely is going to be factored into it. But what can we do, Cathy Donaghy, to address this upward trend? You know, I do struggle to wonder how we could be in 2025 and with the advances we'd hope we're making in terms of, you know, men's respect for women and vice versa, that in areas like this, we're seeing, you know, dramatic increases, peaks, 46-year peaks. It's very concerning.
Yeah, it's actually, it's really disheartening. And those figures are shocking. The one, I don't know whether to call it a positive, but the one, I suppose, chink of light in all of this is, as you said, that when we see very high profile cases, we see a spike. So and what we've seen this year, particularly sort of towards the end of last year and this year, we saw very, very high profile cases. We all remember Natasha O'Brien, the campaigner who was assaulted in the street. And then we think of Nikita Hans' case that she took, and what it took for those two women, you know, to shed that sort of blanket of anonymity and say, this is my story, this is what happened to me. And sometimes in the most graphic, you know, revealing details that I don't think anybody would ever want to go public with, but they decided, you know, this is too important. So I suppose what we did see is those high profile cases leading to the spike. I think that in this country, sexual violence has been endemic for many years. A Savvy report was published about a decade ago, and it showed the numbers of people who had been impacted by sexual violence. So we know that it's there. It's almost like the cloak of secrecy is finally falling away, and we see what it's really like. Okay, then into this mix, what we have now is we have a sort of a changing culture where we have a toxic masculinity being baked into the culture, I would say. That's the best way to put it. And that's been done through lots of ways. And I think that what we're seeing, the online culture, the sort of the accessibility of hardcore pornography online at the touch of a button and a, you know, and a phone at your hands is definitely sort of, I suppose, coarsening people's attitudes and young men's attitudes to what is normal. You know, and we see that in it. There was a really shocking investigation by the Observer newspaper about the sort of, you know, behaviour that students in third level college, what they were seeing, what was seen as normal sexual relations between young people, what, you know, is anything but. So I think what we have to do is that I think that this is something for every single person in society, for the teachers, you know, for the parents. This has to start.
It's hard to counteract, though, say, for instance, the likes of the Tates, right? And they're back in the press today. They're facing charges in Britain now. You, in the online space, you have people like them who are being charged in two countries, and yet still there's massive support for them. They're trying to cancel you. It's the Matrix. The women wanted to be treated like that. That's how women want to be treated. And that's seemingly, because so many people are involved in the conversation, an acceptable conversation that you can throttle someone if they don't want to, because that's what they want. They might not want to want it, but that is what they want. And I just feel like a teacher standing in a classroom, it's an awful lot to combat when, you know, the what a man is don't listen to that. You do what you want.
And I suppose, I mean, teachers, and, you know, that's all of us, Greg, in society, right? As parents, right? And I've written a lot about this in the past. Consent is really at the heart of this, right? And this is talking to young people from the earliest age about what is acceptable and what are acceptable forms of negotiation. We all have to negotiate, and sort of as we're kids, we find out by, you know, sometimes fighting our corner and finding our way, but sort of calling out the microaggressions as parents, as if we're in the pub and we hear something that's inappropriate, we've got to stand up, we've got to say stuff now. You know, where I wonder,
in the WhatsApp group.
Yeah, well, in the WhatsApp group, you know, if it's, you know, wherever it is, it's so disheartening when you see, you know, what's happening with the Tates, or that Conor McGregor was invited to the White House. I mean, it's really, it makes your heart sick, right? But I think that there is a space. I know that in the UK, they are actually bringing in, you know, outside experts to help young men chart some of these spaces. But the other side of this, we have, you know, we have social media companies who have been given such a carte blanche into our children's lives. And it is actually just, it's almost like closing the stable door now, the horse is bolted. They have been given free rein to our children's brains.
I mean, I was listening to an interview with a girl who's in the porn industry. And she spoke in a really matter-of-fact way about accessing hardcore pornography at the age of 11. Like, as if it were everybody, you know, well, maybe they are, I don't know, but didn't make a connection between that and then the lifestyle she chose, which was, anyway. Hugh Friel, you know, the numbers are going up. What can we do?
I think, Craig, you know, if we look at the history of the state, and we'll have to go back to that, that we've kind of embedded kind of sexual violence acceptance in some kind of way because of what happened in the history of the state. And we haven't, you know, the prosecution and the accountability hasn't been good enough in this country in relation to, you know, the Mandan laundries, the Catholic Church, the different various bodies that you know, were supposed to protect children and didn't. And I think, you know, some of that stuff is inherited in relation to acceptability. And I think we need to educate young men more and the curriculum in the school, sexual education more. But I do think that, like, as Thingley's mentioned, Conor McGregor, and we go back, that there was people in this county shouting at protests that he had video evidence of her that has made him accountable that she didn't do it. And I think he didn't do it, sorry. And I think that kind of prompts young men and the acceptability. It's okay. Sure, he got away with it. And we've had figures, if we've had figures like him leading out in relation to that and condemning her to coming forward and taking her case, and rightfully so, what he did was wrong. And, you know, if she voiced her concerns and she's been profiled in the way that she shouldn't have done that,
It's going back a bit now, but the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard case, it seems to be okay now that the social discourse is that even if the evidence is pointing in one direction, that person is a liar or not a liar. Ignore the fact that, okay, there was some physical violence, but it wasn't as bad as some people may. The point is it seems to be like we can now have a debate whether or not that woman that was Conor McGregor was found civilly liable for raping, whether or not she's telling the truth or not. That's okay. That, you know, I'm not saying it's okay, but that's how we converse now. You know, as I say, it feels like it's getting worse than better.
Yeah, I know, I agree with you there, but I think the public trials that got there, Greg, you know what I mean? And it's that acceptance that we have the right then to judge somebody who's come forward in relation to sexual violence or rape. And I think, you know, this country, as I said, is steeped in history of that. Do you know what I mean? Being judgmental around the woman, judgmental around the victim who comes forward to disclose what happened. And I think we sometimes haven't, as a state, accepted that. And I think we need to, you know, going forward, we need to accept that, you know, sexual violence is wrong. Any form of violence towards a woman is wrong. I think any, you know, we all know the increase of drugs has a massive role to play. I'm not saying that it's a percentage of it that happens in nightclubs, spiking, you know, these you know, it's happening. And I think social media is allowing to. Social media has an awful role to play.
Okay. I want to bring Leonard in here just because we're running against the clock, Hugh. Thanks so much for your views on that, Leonard Watson.
Greg, the one thing I will say, and probably justice has to be seen to be served too. You look at the Tates, you look at Conor McGregor. I was just chatting with my daughter last night, she's 13. She heard about Andrew Tate when she was 11 from young boys at school, you know, and them idolizing them. But when these
guys are very worrying. That's very worrying.
She quoted a line to me, it was actually said to her, and we said, you know, the young boy said that you're one day equal rights, equal fights. Mm. You know, he was going to hit her, like, you know. And this is the social media. We're all putting weapons in our children's hands, these phones, like, and they're seeing all this, and they think it's normal, and they think they're cool because they've got flash cars and all this here. Like. But also, us as parents too, we have a big job to do here. But I still go back, the courts have to be tougher on these. That case where the soldier that punched that girl and put up on the social media how he punched her, and straight away it was all about his career, like. Well, that's wrong. Like that that guy deserved to go to jail for a long time.
Suspended sentences for having child abuse image.
Like, never mind that he was sorry. Yeah. He put something to get up on social media. There should be an extra sentence alone for that. Like,
all right.
So we have a responsibility. These people have to see justice. Like,
okay, Leonard Watson. Thanks so much for your time, owner of Watson's Menswear Letterkenny, a campaigner as well too. It has to be said. Thanks very much for your time, Cathy Donaghy. Always a pleasure. I really enjoy your input as always. Thank you, Cathy. Have a great weekend. And Hugh Friel. Good morning to you, Hugh. Thanks so much for joining us. I do appreciate it. Thanks again to Hugh Friel, to Leonard Watson, to Cathy Donaghy. I beg your pardon for their contributions in the first hour. You've been texting and calling in as well. Reality is that we've been so badly served by our local politicians, especially those from government parties, health, infrastructure, defective blocks. They just make excuses. At this point, they should be threatening to leave their respective parties. Not good enough, says Martin. A revolution, that's what's needed for Letterkenny Hospital. Look at what Paddy Diver did to defective concrete block homes. On the map, he put it. It's not good enough. We need to get out there in our thousands. Donegal is indeed neglected for everything. Enough is enough. That comes in from a Buncrana listener. And, you know, in the first instance, you know, the thousands upon thousands, if that's what you wanted to do, don't have to go to Dublin. It would make for a very impressive sight in Letterkenny, or Buncrana, for that matter. It doesn't have to be Letterkenny. Maybe the people of Inishowen might be more inclined to come out. All right, keep your calls, comments coming in. 086 6025000, WhatsApps and texts, or call 074 91 25000. Happy Friday. It's the 9 till noon show. We're going to be back with more after the news and obituary notices.